take full responsibility for everything this government has been doing in tackling coronavirus, and I'm very proud of our record.
Tens of thousands of our citizens have died avoidably. These were unnecessary deaths because of systematic government misconduct.
With good British common sense, we will continue to defeat this virus and take this country forward.
There are a lot of green shoots of opportunity on the horizon. You know, we've been held down on the forest floor for far too long, and we will reach that canopy again.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Sebastian Salek.
And a very good afternoon. I'm Roger Hearing. Now, we begin with the pandemic, as the Home Secretary is backing a tougher police approach for those who break England's coronavirus lockdown.
Our ability to get through the coming weeks and months depends on each and every one of us contributing to what is truly a national effort. But a minority of people are putting the health of the nation at risk by not following the rules.
That was Priti Patel, of course, speaking at the Downing Street briefing, where she said police officers are moving more quickly to issue fines to those who clearly breach regulations. The chair of the National Police Chiefs Council also revealed more teams will be out on dedicated patrols.
Yep, and as well as that, there's news on the Brexit front. The UK this week will begin talks with the EU on how regulators will cooperate over financial services, one of the big issues that was largely sidelined in the trade deal that was struck with the bloc by Boris Johnson just before Christmas. Of course, a crucial part of the UK economy. The two parties have agreed to broker a memorandum of understanding on regulatory cooperation by March. So once again, Roger, the clock is ticking.
Indeed. Well, meanwhile, we have the deal that we have in terms of what was agreed just before Christmas, and that is at the centre of a lot of concern in Northern Ireland at the moment. Some companies not sending food and other items across the Irish Sea because of the complications of the new rules and the effective border between the province and the rest of the UK. There have been some reports and indeed pictures of empty supermarket shelves. Let's bring in Colm Eastwood, who's SDLP party leader and MP for Foyle. Colm, thanks for being with us again. Good to have you on board. I mean, let me just get a sense from you about what the picture is like in Northern Ireland over these difficulties about getting goods in and out.
Well, there clearly have been big problems getting goods into supermarkets, getting deliveries, online deliveries to people's homes. And I think, frankly, we're lucky that there is a lockdown and that, you know, pubs and restaurants are closed. Most of the retail is closed, and I think that has saved us from an even bigger problem. This is really, though, a result of Brexit. I know some people want to say it's a result of the protocol. The protocol is there to mitigate the worst excesses of Brexit, and I think we would be in a much better position if the British government hadn't run the negotiation right down to the dying hours of 2020, and given businesses, particularly businesses in GB, no room or no time to get ready for what was going to be always a cumbersome process. Now, there are things that can be done, of course. I think the protocol is here to stay. It is not something that we wanted, but it is a protection from a hard border in Ireland that is necessary. But there are things that can happen.
Yeah.
We could, of course, extend the grace period and allow, you know, I think the UK government and the EU should be speaking to all of those wholesalers and hauliers and businesses that need to, that can feed in to try to make some changes to how the rules are applied. And that should happen. I mean, I don't think there should be another cliff edge in April. But of course, this is all as a result of the way in which Boris Johnson's government have negotiated.
Well, listen, you talk about how quickly things came into force and how quickly the deal was agreed and the impact that that had on business. What about now, as things get up and running once again, in Northern Ireland, just how badly are these businesses being impacted?
Well, it's hard to tell right now, as I say, because of the lockdown. But there are real issues. I mean, I've spoken to wholesalers yesterday. I've spoken to many other businesses who are really struggling, largely because businesses in GB aren't ready for the changes. And we all understand why that is, because they didn't get any time to get ready. But I don't believe that the grace period that people have up until the beginning of April is enough. I think that should be extended. I don't see why it wouldn't be extended. But I also think there needs to be a look at specific areas as to how we can make this easier, how we can make trade flow easier. You know, of course, Brexit was hailed by the Brexiteers as a great triumph for Britain, that they could go and trade around the world. And what we have now is a trade deal that is actually making trade flows more difficult. So all of this, I think, is a bad thing. I think Britain or the British government have negotiated a bad trade deal. I think Brexit is bad for all of us. But there also are opportunities that people need to recognise. I think businesses and investors in Britain should recognise that Northern Ireland now, despite the current difficulties, has access to both markets, both the British and the European market, in terms of trade flows from here outwards. And I think there are opportunities there for people to invest.
Well, Colm, I wanted to pick up on that precise point, which is that, you know, where one door is not closed is certainly harder to get through. The other door maybe is open. I mean, people in the nationalist community might, I suppose, take comfort from the thought that trade perhaps with the Republic can get better and easier under these circumstances. And I don't know whether you see your piece by Kate Hoey, the former Labour MP and Brexit supporter, in the Telegraph today, saying that she thinks the province is moving further away from the Union. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely do. I think I don't take any. I'm not gleeful about this. I mean, we argued against Brexit. I believe that the trade should be able to flow wherever it wants to, and that's a fundamental principle. But I do think if you look at what's happening as a result of Brexit, if you look at what's happening even as a result of the coronavirus and the two different approaches on the island of Ireland, if you look at what's happening in Scotland, I think the constitutional sounds are shifting. And I firmly believe now, post-Brexit, that the UK will come to an end at some point. I also believe that places a huge burden on those of us in political leadership to manage that process and to make sure that those people who feel British on our island can be properly protected and that their traditions and identity can be supported and actually celebrated.
So if we were to get to the point of a border referendum, is that something that you would support?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm an Irish nationalist. I believe in Irish unity. I think it makes far more sense to have one health service, one economic system, one tax system on the island of Ireland. And I think more and more people are coming to that position. I think, however, we have to plan it. We have to be careful about it. We have to be patient. We have to recognise that there are many people on the island of Ireland, particularly in Northern Ireland, who give allegiance to the British Crown, for example, and the British state. And we have to find ways of recognising and celebrating that difference that we have on our island. And that's what the Good Friday Agreement is there to do. So the principles that underpin the Good Friday Agreement about partnership and reconciliation and power sharing have to be a core part of our vision for a new Ireland. And I think we're in interesting and exciting times, but there is a huge burden on all of us to manage it properly.
Well, Colm, on that point specifically, if you would, I mean, the timing of this then has to be very carefully managed because there are as many unionists who absolutely hate that idea. So not a border referendum anytime soon then, really?
Well, I don't think it should happen soon. I've been saying this and I've been sort of pleading with other nationalists not to rush the fences on it. I think what should happen immediately is that we should all be planning and making the arguments. I don't think any of us can stand up and say we have made all of the arguments or that we've done all the planning and worked out how pensions would work and how the health service would work and all of that. The SDLP, for our part, is beginning that work and has already had many kind of conversations, quiet conversations with people from a unionist British background in Northern Ireland. We'll continue those, but we'll also be publishing position papers on how a united Ireland would work. And so my view on that has always been do the work first, have one referendum and win it. We don't want to have a cycle of constant debate about this. We want to make the argument, get as much support as possible, because it isn't just for us about winning a referendum. It's about building a country, and if you want to build a country where everyone can feel, in which everyone can feel a full part, then there's an awful lot of work to do before you have a referendum. I think Brexit teaches us one lesson: is that if you're going into a referendum, know what you're voting for.
Yeah, I mean, interesting stuff, as you say, shifting sands. That's really something we've got to watch carefully. What about the virus? I mean, a lot of the discourse throughout the United Kingdom is around people not following the rules, all the rest of it. I see in Northern Ireland, the R rate is falling significantly, so the government must be doing something right over there.
Well, I think there have been major mistakes made, to be honest about it. I don't think in the autumn time we locked down strongly enough or quickly enough, and that led to big problems. Then, of course, we opened up at Christmas time, which I suppose everybody wanted to do. And then we've had a very difficult time, and we're, the R number is dropping, the case numbers are dropping quite rapidly, thankfully, but we're still kind of waiting on the big surge to hit, because as we know, there's a lag in terms of hospitalizations. So I think the next couple of weeks will be very, very difficult for our health service. So, and I think the reality now is that, we all know until you know, a large number of people are vaccinated, particularly the most vulnerable, then we need to stay locked down. We need to stay away from each other, wear a mask, and do all that.
Briefly, Colin, because we're running out of time, how is the vaccine program going?
It's actually going very well. I think we're well ahead of most other countries, and that's good. We will keep a close eye on it, obviously. There are very specific dates for the next few weeks. It gets a bit more blurry after that. We hear about spring and summer. We need more answers on how all of that will roll out. But we're keeping a very close eye on it. I think if people do what we all know by this stage we need to do, we can keep people out of hospital until we get everybody vaccinated, and then we can finally get back to some level of normality.
Let's have a look at what else is making news in the world of politics. It is this ongoing row over school meals that the focus is around. The government says it's fixing problems with food parcels being delivered to families. Chartwells, which is the private company contracted to deliver them, has apologised after coming in for criticism from the footballer Marcus Rashford, never a good sign, and the Labour Party as well. Health Secretary Matt Hancock agrees that they weren't good enough.
Food packages that were sent out were clearly unacceptable. One of the strengths of social media is that we could find that out so quickly. That was brought to ministers' attention and they got right on it. So, you know, it's a problem that is being fixed.
So catering companies have now been ordered to make improvements to those parcels.
Yeah, but it's a bit embarrassing that it takes a footballer on social media to get that right. Right, let's talk about G7. Now, Boris Johnson planning to host a virtual meeting of G7 leaders next month. It comes as the Prime Minister starts his presidency of the group, and Bloomberg sources say it will be in addition to the regular G summit, which, of course, is due in mid-June. The meeting expected to take place at the end of February and will centre primarily on the immediate response to the virus pandemic. I think a lot of people will be looking to see how Joe Biden, then the President of the United States, will change the mood somewhat.
Yes, no doubt it'll be very different to his predecessor. And we've not had many of these international summits throughout the pandemic for obvious reasons. So it'll be good to see where everyone's at. And then you've got another geopolitical story here, UK-Sino relations, in fact. The Foreign Secretary saying that the government will fine companies if they cover up imports from the Xinjiang region of China. This is where international observers are accusing Beijing of overseeing forced labour by Uyghur Muslims. Dominic Raab told MPs that the UK must act.
Here in the UK, we must take action to make sure that UK businesses are not part of the supply chains that lead to the gates of the internment camps in Xinjiang, and to make sure that the products of the human rights violations that take place in those camps don't end up on the shelves of supermarkets that we shop in here at home, week in, week out.
And then his Labour counterpart Lisa Nandy said she was expecting him to go further and impose sanctions on the Beijing government. We've had a lot of very, very harsh rhetoric, haven't we, from the Foreign Secretary and the Tory party against China. But yeah, not perhaps that much action to follow it up.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. Meanwhile, if you work for the Treasury, you might start thinking about moving north, because Rishi Sunak's pushing for Leeds, Newcastle or Teesside to be a new northern campus for the Treasury. According to the Financial Times, the new site's going to be known as Treasury North, and it's going to house 750 civil servants to begin with. It's expected to be set up before the next election. The FT says Sunak's going to make the announcement in the next few weeks. Boris Johnson wants to relocate 22,000 jobs from central London to the regions by 2030.
Yes, lots of talks around that. Again, it'll be interesting to see some action here and some jobs spread around the country. Make things a bit less London-centric, which certainly will play well into the hands of the Tories if they're looking to keep hold of all those seats they won in the Midlands and the North. But let's get back to the pandemic. Health Secretary Matt Hancock has said this can be the peak of the pandemic if enough people follow the rules. But Boris Johnson, let's face it, wasn't mincing his words earlier this week when he described the situation as perilous. Joining us now to look at the situation on the whole is Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael. Now, Therese, good to have you. In your column this week, you talk about three main issues that mean cases are continuing to climb. Talk us through how they intersect with each other.
Well, the first one we've known about since the middle of December. At least the Prime Minister knew about it, I think, from about December 18th, and that's the new variant of the virus. Initially, lots of people dismissed this as a major threat because it didn't cause more severe disease. But what happened is it's so incredibly infectious that the number of people with COVID just shot right up, and that inevitably fed through to more hospitalizations. The Prime Minister waited until January 4th to declare a new lockdown. There have been, controversies over whether that's stringent enough and the rules, and we could come to that in a minute. But, basically we've had the new variant. We have a new lockdown that's not as strict as the one we saw in the spring. And we also have, we've been talking all along about lockdown fatigue and will people comply with the rules. And generally they have, but there's been enough sort of loose interpretation of already confusing and ever-changing rules to mean that, combined with the new variant, we just have had a tsunami of cases, and that's overwhelmed a hospital system whose main weakness is shortages of beds and a greatly limited nursing and medical staff that are just, not at the numbers that are needed to cope with those that are being pushed into the system with COVID right now. Not to mention, all of the non-COVID treatments that are being suspended because of the need to shift resources to COVID. So those are the factors that are interacting to cause what Boris Johnson called a perilous moment. And, you can just see how that's put such enormous pressure on the NHS, especially in places like London, where we're told that, 1 in 20 or 1 in 30 people have the disease.
Yeah, and it's a startling image. I mean, the image we've seen coming from hospitals also very startling. And that's, in a way, I suppose, what's pushed people, kind of persuader, really, to make people do what they're supposed to do and accept severe lockdown restrictions. But I guess if the situation in hospitals improves, and we all hope and pray that it will, then he'll be under pretty strong pressure to ease the restrictions.
Well, that's just the real dilemma for Johnson. So if he manages to bring the infection rate down, which of course, he will, because the fact is we've got a vaccine, the more vaccines that are in arms, the fewer people who can get the disease, and the vaccines are going to the most vulnerable people first. So as that happens, we will see infection rates go down. We will see hospitalization, most importantly, hospitalization rates reduce. And then, though, he faces the pressure that's diminished somewhat in recent weeks to release the lockdown restrictions. But if he does that too fast, we could also see the pressure on the NHS resume. And so, it's kind of this catch-22 for the Prime Minister. But crucially, if the vaccine rollout is going to accelerate and continue to be, world-beating, which it is in many ways, then he's got to have capacity in the NHS to administer the vaccine. And so I think we'll see him holding that hard line against anyone who's encouraging him to lift those restrictions too early. But the pressures will shift as we get into February if he meets those targets.
And I mean, you mentioned the vaccine. That surely is the thing that is really going to be a bit of a lifeline, to state the obvious. They're happening. It is going on behind the scenes. When are these vaccinations going to start having an impact on the rate of infection?
I mean, they are probably already having somewhat of an impact. We've seen, I think, 17 boroughs in London now reporting lower rates of infection. So I think, but the needle is coming down very slowly because, of course, it takes time for the infections to feed through. So many of the deaths we're seeing now are people who were infected in, say, mid-December or even earlier. So, the fear that we'll get a bit worse before it gets better, but there is a pretty quick pace of vaccinations happening now, again among the over 80s and soon to be over 70s. So that should, we should start seeing this easing into February. And then the big question is whether it will ease enough that they feel confident to reopen schools.
Now, Therese, I mean, I was mentioning earlier in the program, it does seem extraordinary that an issue that now is coming well, in big time for the government, which is once again school meals, meals for poorer people, for people of limited means, and the extension over it. Of course, it was fought over by Marcus Rashford, a footballer, on social media. And now, once again, the issue about inadequate provision of these meals all seems to come down to the intervention of Marcus Rashford. I mean, that's absurd, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what can one say about this except that it's, you know, the government has once again left this huge open goal. You know, to its credit, this time there was an immediate response. As soon as as soon as someone tweeted a very meager looking food box and said, I think that, you know, public funds were charged £30 for this, I would have bought it for £5.22, tweeted a Twitter user called Roadside Mum. Now, the company that delivered the box clarified that this was a food box for 5 days, not 10 days, that the public purse was charged much less. It was charged £10.50. Nevertheless, it is hugely embarrassing. It's clearly, not what anyone expected, not what the government promised. And of course, they've had to step in and promise to fix it. But a combination of social media and the remarkable Marcus Rashford, and you just wonder how many times it's going to take for the government to get it right and really deliver for those who are, you know, who don't have food security in the country, and it's a surprising number.
But then, of course, there are other issues that are just waiting to flare up like this. I mean, you've got the eviction ban, the universal credit top-up, things that the government brought in earlier in the pandemic that are due to expire, that they're going to face a lot of pressure to renew. Would it not be better just to get on this now rather than fighting that fight where, let's face it, they're not going to look good?
Yeah, I think that's a real weakness of this government, and it's one that the opposition Labour Party is now, you know, hammering almost on a daily basis. We saw Keir Starmer tweeting immediately in reaction to the initial images that, you know, it was woefully inadequate, and the Labour Party is now giving a series of speeches setting out their own economic policy, and one of the things that they're focusing on is reducing waste while also providing for the poorest in society, not sort of reacting to the economic side of the crisis by skimping on public expenditure. So, you know, fully agree, this is one the government needs to get out ahead of if it's not going to constantly be on the defense.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.